Our first reading is from Exodus chapter 20, beginning at the first verse through to verse 15. Exodus chapter 20. And God spoke all these words, "I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself an idol in the form of anything in heaven above or on the earth beneath or in the waters below. You shall not bow down to them or worship them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, punishing the children for the sin of the fathers to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me, but showing love to 1,000 generations of those who love me and keep my commandments. You shall not misuse the name of the Lord your God, for the Lord will not hold anyone guiltless who misuses his name. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you, nor your son or daughter, nor your manservant nor maidservant, nor your animals, nor the alien within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. Honor your father and your mother, so that you may live long in the land the Lord your God is giving you. You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal." The second reading is from John's Gospel, chapter 8, and that's on page 1073. In the church Bibles. John chapter 8, verses 1 to 12. But Jesus went to the Mount of Olives. At dawn he appeared again in the temple courts, where all the people gathered around him, and he sat down to teach them. The teachers of the law and the Pharisees brought in a woman caught in adultery. They made her stand before the group and said to Jesus, "Teacher, this woman was caught in the act of adultery. In the law, Moses commanded us to stone such women. Now, what do you say?" They were using this question as a trap in order to have a basis for accusing him. But Jesus bent down and started to write on the ground with his finger. When they kept on questioning him, he straightened up and said to them, "If any one of you is without sin, let him be the first to throw a stone at her." Again he stooped down and wrote on the ground. At this, those who heard began to go away one at a time, the older ones first, until only Jesus was left, with the woman still standing there. Jesus straightened up and asked her, "Woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you?" "No one, sir," she said. "Then neither do I condemn you," Jesus declared. "Go now and leave your life of sin." When Jesus spoke again to the people, he said, "I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life." The Word of God.
Thank you, sir. I've been a bit daft this morning because I thought it was really, really hot yesterday. I'll wear a dress. And now I've got nowhere to put anything. So I'm going to be waving things at you this morning. I'll just have a drink before I get started. Okay, Jesus was writing in the sand. How many of us would love to know what he was writing? Yeah? It actually doesn't matter. Okay? Things that are included in the Bible are there for a reason. Things that are excluded because they're not important. What is important is that he was writing in the sand. This woman was caught in the very act of adultery, as it says in the King James Version. So that means that we actually know who she was committing adultery with. Well, we don't, but the Pharisees and the Sadducees did. The law of Moses requires both parties to be brought forward. When somebody is brought to the priest for having committed a sin and for punishment, the priest is then required to bend down and write in the dust on the, in the temple the law that has been broken and the name of the person that is accused. What Jesus was doing here was giving a sign to the Pharisees. They had broken the law by not bringing both parties before him. But Jesus was showing he was going to keep the law anyway by writing in the sand. So it doesn't matter what was actually written. The likelihood is it was the sin that had been committed, but maybe on both parts. Maybe he was identifying. He allowed it up to God and their consciences to actually come forward and realise that just bringing the woman forward, they had actually broken the law themselves. So this was a sign to the Pharisees more than what he was actually writing. And we're going to talk about signs today. The beach ball that's an actual example, not so much the bit that we did about adding on what the thief thought and what the Christian thought, but the main example was a theory developed by a guy called Paul McGee. And he also developed this, a theory called sumo. Anyone heard of this yet? No? Okay. So God is very much about looking at all the sides of the beach ball. Sumo can mean shut up and move on. So he uses that side of it to help people to develop in their personal lives and let go of things. But it can also mean stop, understand, and move on. And this is what Jesus was doing here. He stopped and he shut up. He understood the situation from the view of the Father, seeing the whole situation, and then he helped the lady to move on by saying, no, I don't condemn you, but don't do it again. Okay. So, he was understanding why they behaved the way that they did and helped people to move on. He was showing that no one in this situation is innocent. God sees all sides of the story. He sees all of our sufferings, all of our desires, everything that's within our hearts. And he calls us as Christians to do the same with other people, to understand the situation from the whole view of the beach ball, from the view that God can see. The commandments we're looking at, theft and adultery, I found it really, really interesting that these three, theft and adultery and murder together, they have no reason why. They have no explanation. It's just don't do. When you look at don't make any idol for you, you see that God says, because I will punish down to the third and fourth generations for those that disobey me, and I will reward for those that love me. When we talk about honouring our father and mother, it's so we'll live long in the land that God has given us. He gives us a reason why, but these are very clearly just don't do. So see the reasons why in the other commandments things come a bit clearer. So we're going to explore that a little bit more. We're going to look at how everybody has, in every single one of those commandments, everybody has the same central issue, and that's sin. But I'm also going to look at it in terms of chronic illness. Now, I can't cover the whole, if there is anyone suffering with chronic illness here today, what I say today will not cover the whole breadth of what people suffer with, how they deal with it, anything like that. It's just for an example situation. What I'm going to look at is an illness called lupus, okay? Is anyone aware of lupus? Yes? Yep, okay. It's a very, very debilitating illness. It's very, very difficult for the people that struggle with it. I do, as some of you know, I do actually have a chronic illness myself, or two chronic illnesses, and I've chosen not to use those because it's just far easier to be a little bit more distant from it. Okay, so we're going to look at signs, we're going to look at symptoms, treatments and cures. Any diligent person in relation to signs can actually read them and understand. In a medical situation, a diligent doctor can understand the signs and signs of an illness. In this situation, the Pharisees were very, very diligent. Okay? They knew the law. They knew it inside out, back to front. They worked really, really hard, and the Sadducees as well, to make sure that they kept the law to the letter. But Jesus was showing us something different here. He was talking about the spirit of the law. Now, lupus, the word actually means wolf, and that's because it's signified by a rash that looks like a wolf bite. It's amazing the things you can find out when you start researching a sermon. It's just, and I did show this to a friend of mine when I first wrote it, and she said, "I never knew that." So yes, this rash is the first thing that is the first sign, the first physical sign that we see is this rash. Other signs are like hair loss and lesions, and I'm sure there are many, many more as well. Lesions particularly in the mouth. So lesions are cuts and blisters and things like that that just come for no reason. Okay, those are some of the signs of lupus. The signs we're talking here about here are adultery and theft. Those behaviours in themselves are actually signs of something deeper. Okay, they are an outward sign that something is wrong. Something's not going right in that person's life. Something is not happening right. Okay? These signs can actually cause quite a lot of distress to people, not just for, in the case of lupus, not necessarily just for the sufferer, but for the people around them. When people see me in pain, they find it really hard, really hard. And it's more distressing for me to see them struggling with my pain than me actually being in pain. And there are consequences to adultery and theft. Prison, the effect on the victims, taking something that somebody else desperately needs. You know, they don't know what the situation is of their victim. They don't know if they are stealing from somebody who can afford to lose, or somebody who that is their last bit that they were going to sell to make sure they put the food on the table the next day. So we have signs of the problem, but no diagnosis. We then have symptoms. Symptoms are what you don't see. So symptoms are what's going on behind the scenes. Lupus is often called the great imitator because it is very, very difficult to diagnose because the signs and symptoms are very similar to many, many other illnesses. Signs like fatigue, pain, exhaustion, things that we don't actually physically see, but they are there, and the person themselves is suffering with them. Symptoms of sin, or of adultery, the signs of adultery and theft, could be things like poverty. It could be drug or alcohol abuse. It could be desire. It could be loneliness, jealousy. And it could create some of the opinions that we've put on the beach ball today. So I would say that the symptoms of sin are actually, it could actually be called the great deceiver. So we've got the great imitator for lupus, and we've got the great deceiver for sin, because you could look at those and see them as problems in themselves that need to be solved, but we're still not at the core issue. Is all that making sense? Yeah? Awesome. Cool. Now, I believe that the core issue with the sin is selfishness. Selfishness at its core is about thinking about only yourself to the detriment of others. Self-care is something very different and is still very, very important. Being selfish in terms of looking after yourself is fine. Selfishness in terms of not wanting others to have things just because you want it, that sort of thing, is what I'm talking about here. So, selfishness is prevalent throughout the scriptures. We have the fall of Satan. He was wanting to raise himself above the throne of God. Very, very selfish. The Garden of Eden, eating the apple instead of obeying what God had said. Pharaoh, wanting to keep the Jews as slaves, letting them go, not letting them go, letting them go, not letting them go. And one of my favourites, this is it's a bit of a strange one to be in there, but Ashan and Jericho, how the Jews were told not to take any spoils, but Ashan and his family did and hid them in the tent. And as a result, the whole of his family were killed in order to actually take care of that sin. So we have a diagnosis. Selfishness for here, for the illness that we've been talking about is lupus. But we all have an ill and dying body. We all have signs of the ill and dying body. We all get colds, we all get coughs, we all might have some illness, whether it be a nasty illness like cancer, or whether it be a cold, whether it be a urine infection, anything like that. They're all signs of a dying body. Without the ill and dying body, lupus wouldn't exist. Without sin, the selfishness would not exist. So, the core issue is sin. No one's exempt. This is our chronic illness. This is our chronic illness that every single one of us shares. Every single one of us, no one is exempt. Jesus is the only person in that situation with the adulteress that hadn't sinned and was able to cast that first stone, and yet he didn't. He didn't because he saw the bigger picture. Jesus knew what the Father's view of the situation was. He also knew that redemption was available, was coming. So the Pharisees and the Sadducees were working on the letter of the law. They were working on the law as it was written. They were saying, this woman's done wrong. The law says we must stone her. Jesus was looking at the spirit of the law, which is grace, and which is good news for all of us. you had a broken arm, would you go and cut it off? Yes, you would. I can't be bothered to let it heal, so I'll cut it off. Think about it. When you have a broken arm, you go to the hospital, they reset it, and they allow it to heal. No? You can't have plans. But they will do something to try and avoid you having to lose the arm. Okay? They will try every which way to avoid you having to lose the arm. And this is what Jesus was doing here. He was using another way to avoid this woman losing her life and give her a second chance. And he gives us so many second chances. Isn't it amazing? How many times we have second chance, third chance, fourth chance, fifth chance, or probably with me 60 million chances. But he saw every colour on the beach ball. He saw all of these post-it notes on the beach ball in that situation. He saw what the Pharisees had written, what the Sadducees had written about the woman in adultery. Probably they made her stand in front of him as well. So she had to stand, and to be honest, she was probably still naked. So, she'd been caught in the act. But he could also see what was on her heart. And he showed grace. He let both parties go. He showed them that no party was innocent, but he let them both be convicted of their sin and helped them to move forward. So, we've got the diagnosis, we've got the core issue, the sin, the lupus. I'm not linking the two, by the way. So we go on to treatments. Now, treatments is something we do to ourselves, okay? So treatments for lupus could be applying creams, painkillers, changing lifestyles, dietary requirements, medication. Those are all things that we put onto or into our body to help relieve the signs and symptoms. Treatment doesn't cure. It purely helps to ease and maybe does get rid of the symptoms for a little while, but that it doesn't cure the actual illness. Now with sin, selflessness and thankfulness are the treatments. Here. When you think about theft and adultery, they are all about wanting something that somebody else has. Wanting something, depriving somebody else of something. If we can be thankful for what we've got, we don't need. Yes, we can. What was his name again? Cheeky. So if we can be thankful for Cheeky, and the other ones at the back. We don't need to be going out and seeking pleasure elsewhere or something that somebody else has. God is our provider. And he has blessed each one of us with a different life, different story. I used an example last week, actually, from Facebook that said basically that life is the most difficult test. Some people fail because they're trying to copy others, not realising that everybody has a different exam sheet. So, all of us have different journeys, all of us have different struggles and different happy times and various different things. But the treatment, thankfulness, being thankful, is really, really important. I recently came to know about a homeless man that was living in Lyndhurst. I go to Lyndhurst Baptist Church, although I live in Lymington. And I knew of him through a friend. I'd met him a couple of times prior to finding out that he'd been made homeless. And I tried to help. I offered him to come to the men's breakfast. I offered him to come to our Easter breakfast. Offered all sorts of things. And then I found out that he was having to travel every day to Southampton to wash and be able to wash his clothes. He was doing this on the bus, so it was probably a good hour's trip. And then he was having to take the bus back to Brockenhurst, so another good hour, to then take the train to Sway to go to work, because he was still working, he was just homeless. So I said to him, well, what if I speak to the church and find out if there's somebody locally that will allow you to do all that locally? And what he said to me was, he said, it gives me something to do in the mornings. And what really struck me about that was, despite not having a roof over his head, despite not being able to engage fully in everything that he wanted to do, he was grateful for that opportunity to have something to do to keep him occupied. And that's what he focused on. And to me, that was just amazing. And by the way, this guy's not a Christian either. So it just blew me away that the one thing that I could offer him to help, and he refused because it gave him something to do. It gave him a purpose. It gave him some sort of sense of identity. And I just thought that was really, really powerful. And of course, the other thing to be thankful for is the cross. Now, I'm going to stop here for a minute. I want to share something with you that happened just yesterday. And this is where I go back to my story. I wasn't going to share this because I didn't know how it was going to go. However, I think it's really, really important, and it just really shows the power of the cross. I told you that my father died when I was 3 years old. He was killed by an IRA terrorist. He was, along with 6 other military musicians. Yesterday, I had the great honour and privilege of meeting up with a paramilitary ex-terrorist and sharing stories and laughing together, crying together, and praying together. And even if I ever get married, nothing will ever top what happened yesterday. That love and that. Now, what I did find out was that he went into terrorism partially because he lost a friend to the IRA. So we were two people who'd had the same experience, two different decisions in how to deal with it. But you know what? One cross, one Lord, one measure of grace covered all of that. And it was so, so powerful. That is the power of the cross. That is just awesome. I'm still absolutely stuck for words to be able to describe to anybody how much that meant to me and how much it meant to him as well, to be able to know that God loved us both the same way, regardless of the decisions that we had made in our lives, from the same situation to very different lives, back to the same God, back to Jesus. And it was wonderful, absolutely wonderful. So Jesus came to abolish, fulfill, not to abolish the law. You nearly had me then, didn't you? just to look at this letter of the law and spirit of the law thing again. Has anyone seen Les Miserables? How many of you? Oh, quite a few. And there's a couple of people that haven't. I've seen it 3 times in London. I'm so addicted to it. It's a fabulous story, isn't it? Isn't it amazing? The story of Valjean and Javert. So you've got Javert, who is the letter of the law. In one point, he actually says, I am the law and I will not be mocked. The law will not be mocked. And he is chasing Valjean. Time after time after time, he He has given his whole life to chasing down this man that broke his parole, to the point where he takes his own life because he cannot handle the idea of grace. And then you have Valjean, who is shown such amazing grace by the bishop, who should have gone back to prison for stealing the bishop's silver, but was in fact given all of the silver and told to go and change his life. And he gave his life to Jesus, and he set up a factory for the poor. He became mayor of a town. He took on an orphan child and brought her up as his own, and was constantly throughout the story showing grace to people, even to Javert. When he had Javert at the point where he could have taken a knife to him, he let him go. And I think that's just a wonderful view of what God does with us. God has us at knife point every day. He can choose when he takes our lives. He gives and he takes away. And yet he chooses forgiveness. He chooses to give us grace. He chooses to give us the cross. However, we have to make a decision. This is going back to the sumo principle now. So we need to stop. With an illness, we need to realise that the signs and symptoms are not normal. And we need to recognise sin. We need to understand. With the illness, we understand and accept the diagnosis and take the treatment. With sin, we have to agree and confess to God and understand that it is forgiven. And then we move on. With the illness, we adapt our lives. With sin, we leave it at the cross and we move forward with Jesus. Is that making sense to everyone? Yeah? And this is why I went with the sumo principle, because it makes it nice and easy to kind of picture it. So what God does is he comes in and bursts the beach ball. I'm not going to burst it because what a waste. I can go down the beach later. But he comes in through the cross, through the power of the cross, he comes in and he bursts that beach ball that's obscuring our vision of each other. And he says, look how I see you. Look how I see that person. You joked earlier about, shall I come and sit next to this person I don't like? But we see those people through God's eyes. And it's the same when we're looking at situations like theft and adultery. Do we see them the way we saw them on the beach ball? Or do we see them through God's eyes? Grace is not a get-out-of-jail-free card. It doesn't mean that we carry on sinning. Now, there's loads of scriptures that are relevant to this, but one I just want to share with you is the spiritual soap, it's often nicknamed. 1 John 1, verses 9 and 10. If we claim to be without sin, we deceive ourselves and the truth is not in us. If we confess our sins, he is faithful and just and will forgive us our sins and purify us from all unrighteousness. If we claim we have not sinned, we have made him out to be a liar and his word is not in us. Do you know what? This is what the situation was with me yesterday. I was sat with a man who had potentially killed a lot of people, was certainly involved in the planning of it, and yet I was a sinner as well. And I'd said to him, if I ever met the person who did plant that bomb, I would hope that my first words would be, do you know what? You're no worse than me because I hated you. And Jesus says, hate is just as bad as murder. We're all sinners. We're all on an even keel. We're all in the same place. Jesus was the only one that had power in the situation with the lady found in adultery. And yet he chose not to condemn her. He had the power to. He had the power to do everything, to do what was necessary. Do people see this in us as Christians? Do they see that grace in us? God gives us the fruit of the Spirit. He doesn't leave us to say, okay, right, we sorted the illness out, off you go. And he doesn't leave us to then fall back into sin, fall back into the illness. He gives us power. He gives us the Holy Spirit. And he gives us the fruit of the Spirit. Now, if you notice about the fruit, there's only actually two that are relevant to us personally. The rest are all about how we are viewed to other people. So you have joy and you have peace, or maybe self-control as well. They are for developing us. Then you have patience, is what we do with other people. Kindness is what we do to other people, hopefully. Goodness, gentleness, they are all fruit of the Spirit which we are given to share with other people. And they help us to take control. You remember we talked about desires and things like that. Self-control as a fruit of the Spirit will help us to take control of the signs and symptoms of sin and move forward with it. The cure is not elitist. This is my point. It's for everybody. It's for everybody sat here. It's for everybody that was sat around that table yesterday. It's for everybody that's out there today, whether they be in a pub, whether they be at church, whether they be shopping. It's for everybody. It's God's provision is for everybody. And just on a little lighthearted note, I wonder whether we'd get more people in church if we renamed it Sinners Anonymous. If people could see that in here, we're not here because we're any better than anyone else. That if they could see that we are here because we all share the same core and we come and worship the same God who gives us the cure for that. So, the challenge then, what type of law keeper do we want to be? Do we want to be somebody by the letter of the law who looks at people and says, you've done wrong, you need this punishment? Or do we want to be those working on the spirit of the law, showing God's grace to everybody, sharing God's love, sharing the cure that we have and the fantastic opportunity to praise and worship a God of love who sent Jesus to die on the cross for us so that we could be cured and we can spend eternity with him. Now, I'm just going to add on there, if you don't know about that spirit of the law, if you've not experienced that, please talk to somebody who will pray with you and talk it through. Because it is such a benefit. It is such what Jesus has done for us and what he offers is just so awe-inspiring.